find such a love at our age? Whoever thought we could dance on a...
Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Tolmer.
Hello, Judy, and hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks the title of today's episode.
Conflict to Connection, an interview with Marissa Flood.
And we just finished that interview. And, you know, as I keep commenting, because it keeps being true, it was just delightful.
It was delightful.
We keep having all these guests, and they keep being really neat.
Well, we've been very fortunate.
We have been very fortunate, and is this immodest of me to point out that maybe we're good interviewers? I don't know.
Well, that's what some people tell us.
That's what some people tell us.
That we've gotten, that we're good interviewers, and from our guests, they've enjoyed being on our show.
They have, immodest though it may be to point that out. Speaking of immodest,
we
also have some books that we have, which are really good.
Plug away.
Let's plug away. What do you want to start with?
Why don't we start with the book that started it all, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Now, I have been telling folks why to get that book for the last few weeks, and I noted to you earlier, we're having a bit of a spike in sales, especially the audio on that book. And maybe it's because I've been pointing out why you should get it, or maybe it just, who knows why these things happen.
Who knows?
Anyway, why should you get that book? That book, Reigniting the Spark, helps you feel better. That's what people keep telling me. It's like, oh, this'll, you know, it doesn't solve all your problems, but it makes it seem like they're soluble somehow, you know?
Yeah, it's got a lot of useful information in it.
It does. And I will say that particular book, you know, the title of our podcast being Couples Therapy in 7 Words, that book being my first couples therapy book was the one that is organized around the 7 words. Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. Mm-hmm. It was organized in sections around that. Right. And so do get a hold of that book. You can get it anywhere books are sold. You can get it from Amazon. If you want the audiobook, which I narrated, you can get it there as well. And my more recent book.
It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
Yes, indeed. Mentioned that in our, do we mention that in our interview or is that afterward? I don't remember. We were talking with our guest about it. That's a book that, what I hear about that book, and people like that one too, by the way. what I hear about that book is it's a great look. I think I have a chapter in there, A Look Under the Hood.
Right.
It's a great look about how does this couples therapy thing work? And my rather irreverent subtitle, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong, is really indicating that it's not fundamentalist. You know what I mean? In other words, there's always new stuff to learn about this. But if you get a look in, at least how I do couples therapy, again, people have told me they find it really an interesting view and helps them with their own therapy, if they're in therapy, helps them if they're a therapist. So do get a hold of that.
Right, because you're not sitting there and saying, well, Jordan, tell me, how does that make you feel when Melissa says that you are blah, blah, blah?
No, that is correct. I don't say that. I laughed once because
I think some people have that impression because, you know, you see that in a lot of movies and things. And
that's right.
I've never sat in on a room with you, but just from conversations with you and reading your book, that's so not how you operate.
When we're watching a show that has a therapy scene in it, oh my God, I must be insufferable. I don't know how you put up with me. Because I'm saying things like, I would never say that. But and yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I don't say, how does that make you feel? It's funny. I think in 30 years, I have said it twice and I've noticed it. It's been this particular context.
Yeah.
But it's just not where I go.
Right.
For reasons that if you want to find out more about, read that book. and let's talk about, let's just go ahead and say, your book.
My book, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber. My pseudonym, my alter ego.
That's available at lariazilber.com. That's LariaZylber, lariazilber.com. That information appears in the notes for each of our episodes, so you can find it there. Speaking about why to buy that book, what a wonderful book that is, in my humble, unbiased opinion. it is beautiful erotica. If you're not into erotica, you're not going to want to buy that book, are you? But if you're into erotica, this is beautiful erotica, and it is also biblically based from someone, namely Judy, who is deeply immersed in from a Jewish perspective, especially, immersed in biblical understanding and study.
Right.
So it's very respectful of these characters and also really hot.
So thank you.
It's all of the above. So please do get a hold of that.
It's not really kinky. I mean,
it's like, not. No, it's not super kinky, yeah, yeah. But it is. It's explicit.
Yes, it's explicit.
It is
and
explicit.
Erotic.
So I want to put in a word for the book of mine that has now progressed to the stage where I am into revisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I want folks to know to be ready for this new book. The title, it's changed slightly from last time I talked about it, I think. The title is now Betrayal and Forgiveness, How to Navigate the Turmoil and Learn How to Trust Again.
Ooh,
and learn
that.
To trust again, yeah.
Like
and
that.
Yeah, a lot of folks have said, ooh, that's
mm-hmm.
that sounds important. Well,
mm-hmm.
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really pleased with it. You've been through it. I
mm-hmm.
think you were pleased with
yes.
it.
Yes.
If you
yeah.
weren't, I would have rewritten it until you were. And it's now out actually being read by a number of folks who's...
Mm-hmm. You got your better readers.
Yeah. Well, you're a good
not
reader.
Not better,
too.
I said like the better.
B-E-T-A- oh, beta readers.
Beta.
Yes. Beta, yes. If that's a,
yes,
why not? It is now. Beta readers. Yeah, the folks, and I respect them all, of course, and so I'm asking for their feedback, and we'll be making some revisions. And the cover is being designed
mm-hmm.
Next week, actually, as we do this.
Or yeah, you got your...
Yeah. So, anyway, watch out for that book, folks, when it happens. We will certainly do our best to let you know and you know, tell folks about it and tell folks about our podcast too.
Right. And now on to our interview with
Marissa.
We'll
see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Marissa Flood. Marissa is a relationship coach who helps struggling couples transform their relationship and return to the intimacy and connection they once had. Marissa has trained in the field of healthy relationships for 15 years, learning from teachers including Harville Hendricks, Terry Real, and John Gottman. As Marissa puts it, her goal is to provide people with the relational intelligence needed to navigate the minefields of modern partnership. Marissa, there we go. Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. Boy,
thank
I was
you.
Stumbling through that. Almost felt like a tongue twister.
Anyway, hello. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
I will tell our listeners, it's funny, we were just talking earlier about, we like to have this be informal. I was telling Judy, you know, if you stumble in the intro, we're not going to edit it out. It's fine. So there we are.
There we are.
I think I planted
away.
That seed
I think
for
you. Did.
Yeah.
So usually I don't, but.
I know. I'm trained at hypnosis and maybe I accidentally gave you a
suggestion.
Yeah, that must be it. Anyway, hi.
Anyway, nice to have you here.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. So we always like to ask our guests, for starters, how did you get into the work that you do? You know, tell us something about your own journey into it.
Yeah, so it started in my mid-30s. I was kind of struggling in my relationship. I was working on Wall Street at the time and really running a lot of masculine energy. And I wanted to kind of figure out, you know, was it me or my partner? Like, who's off here? And so I started to study and realize that love is a skill and we... don't rise to the level of our expectations, we fall to the level of our training. And so I realized that I really needed to upskill in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out over time that a lot of the culture isn't taught much about relationship at all. And so I really wanted to start to offer that to people. And also I saw that I had some unresolved trauma that was showing up in my relationship. And so I started a whole journey to recover from that. And so those form the two foundations of the work that I do with my clients. Those top-down skills and the bottom-up healing work, I think, are important.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when you talk about the culture doesn't teach people about relationships, I think I could say that another way. Oh, yeah, it does. It teaches people a bunch of wrong stuff. But I'm curious if you could,
yeah, especially yeah. if you come from a family that had dysfunction. In
well,
it
yes.
too,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You
I mean, we are definitely, you know, given very poor role models in the culture. We're sold a lot of myths around love and how to navigate it. And it's really does us disservice. And, you know, I think that's why we need to really be in these types of conversations so we can find out what's the reality of what's happening in relationships and how do we move the needle forward.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned those two parts of your work, sort of the, I'm intrigued by that, you know, the top-down part and the bottom-up part. I'm trained in EMDR and various kinds of trauma. You know, I used to do that a lot. Now I've been focusing on couples for a long time, but it's interesting. Could you comment some on, you know, what do you mean by top-down and bottom-up?
Sure. So we feel that, you know, a lot of the trauma that we go through as a child, which we it ends up kind of really affecting our behavior and relationship, really limiting and controlling the way that we show up. And so it's in order to kind of come into relational recovery, as we call it in RLT, you really need to learn how to, you know, set boundaries with yourself and your partner, learn about self-esteem, how to repair with your partner, all of these core things to really navigate the day-to-day parts of relationship. And so I think those are the number one things that I start to teach our clients as soon as they get into sessions is, you know, those skills that we need to navigate.
And you mentioned, I think you used the initials ROT. Could you tell us what that is?
Yeah, so this is Relational Life Therapy, RLT. It's
RLT,
the
got it.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's the
Yeah.
work of Terry Real, and
Oh, yeah.
that's the main model that I work with my couples in.
And what are some of the misconceptions in relationships that that you said that that our culture feeds us? What are these misconceptions?
Well, I think that, you know, one of them has to do with conflict. We live in a very conflict-avoiding culture, and we're taught that, you know, it's something that should be minimized or kind of not dealt with at all. But this really ends a lot of possibilities for partnership. And so I think the first, you know, shift in mindset is our relationship to conflict itself, and that it's something that can actually cause transformation and create deeper levels of intimacy in a couple. And again, that's a skill that we can learn, but we have to really adjust our understanding of what's available there. You know, we can learn something new about our partner, get new agreements, and really, you know, come to a new level of understanding if we know how to do it.
Yeah,
You
that's
talk, that's a
you're talking my language
you read his
there.
book, I see.
Perhaps you read my books. Well, actually, what I talk a lot about is that couples need both stability and intimacy. And I talk about the chief skill of intimacy being to tolerate anxiety right along the lines you're describing. That, yes, indeed, you have to be able to even bring up conflict rather than avoid it, because that's exactly where the growth will occur.
Yeah, and I think you raise a good point there because, you know, in our culture, we kind of have this passive relationship to relationship. It's kind of like we get what we get and then we complain about it. And so we're really beholden for us to know how to show up and ask for what we want and do that relationally. But it's, you know, love is a minute by minute practice. It's that showing up with intimacy day by day and asking for what you want and you know, doing what you can to create a healthy relationship. It's a proactive process.
Yeah. Well, asking for what you want, and of course, not freaking out when your partner is asking for what they want, and you know, and which you won't always like, and they won't always like. So yeah, working through that conflict is really where intimacy is, in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for couples to learn that, because like you said, it's not a lot of times it's not modeled for us. You know, you're not going to go to a movie where everything's, you know, all light and breezy, because then like where's the conflict there? So you know, used to seeing people getting mad, angry, and yelling at each other, and you know, all that stuff that goes on. So
Yeah, I mean, it is a journey to kind of, you know, recover from the norms in society. If we really truly want a healthy and intimate relationship, we have to go on a journey of healing and growth. And it's not an overnight process. A lot of the ingrained behaviors, you know, have been decades in the making. And so there's an unraveling and a waking up process that needs to happen. You know, effectively, we're kind of building new neural pathways to a second consciousness, as my teacher Terry Real calls it. And so, you know, it's critical that we kind of look at this as almost like a relationship gym. You know, I kind of CrossFit my clients. There's going to be a corner for boundaries, a corner for communication, a corner for repair, and you have to get the reps in. And that's the only way that it's going to move the needle is to really roll up your sleeves and do that work.
Yeah. So when you say get the reps in, that's a great metaphor, you know. So what are the reps you put people through? You know, what are some of the exercises you would invite people to learn to do?
Yeah, so one of the first ones is looking at boundaries, in our talking boundaries, how we speak to our partner, how we listen to them. And sometimes it's us that's are not containing our emotions in a healthy way. We need to be moderate when we're speaking to our partner, and so that they can really listen to what we have to say. So sometimes it's learning about managing our own emotions. So we call that, a boundary work. And also sometimes there are issues around self-esteem. We might be somebody that either goes down into a shame attack or we go up into grandiosity. And so learning to kind of moderate between those two and pull ourselves down into, the reality that I'm a human, I'm imperfect, but I'm just as good as my partner, but not better than.
Yeah, that's, you know, that when you said moderate, I was smiling because I actually did a podcast. When we did we do this? I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, where we were in between. It was a guest who wasn't able to come at the last minute. And I suddenly had this thought, oh, I know what to do. So we did a podcast where I claim, and I still claim, it's a bit ridiculous, that I have the key that unlocks all relationship problems. You know, we can all retire now.
Yes.
And what is the key that unlocks all relationship problems? It relates to what you were just saying. It's the ability to be moderately annoyed. That's it.
Yes.
It's the ability to be moderately annoyed. If we could all be moderately annoyed, we wouldn't have war. We probably wouldn't have divorce. We were just like, well, that's moderately annoying, but I love you anyway,
I
you know.
love with
I can live with
it.
it, you know.
Yeah. No, I
Yeah.
think you do raise a very, important point there. But there's a catch with that, I think, because Terry Real talks about how, other models teach you the skills, but we teach you why you don't want to use them. And so if it was easy, the information is available now. We know how to have a great relationship, but why aren't people uptaking it in, a critical way? And we believe it's that underlying trauma that hasn't yet been dealt with that's, causing that reactivity, that, is part of what we need to work on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true.
So when you know, you're talking about trauma, and how, you know, how do you help people deal with trauma? I mean, do you have particular, I mentioned I'm trained in EMDR for our listeners who don't know what that is, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, one of a number of therapies developed in the last, what, 30, 40 years that have been shown to be way more effective than just talk therapy is for dealing with trauma stuff. How do you handle that in the course of your work?
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think that, the sweet spot is really talk therapy, but also some level of somatic work to deal with all the different symptoms. And we use a process which effectively is coming into right relationship with these wounded parts. It's parts work essentially, and we reparent those younger wounded parts that, never got the nourishment, validation, and recognition from their caretakers.
I think have we done some shows on IFS? Again, for our listeners, internal family
Yes.
systems, when you talk about parts work, that's certainly
Yes.
a big
I don't think it
acronym.
was specifically
We
that. I
might not
think
have
we've
said that.
touched on it with some of our guests, but
Yeah,
yeah.
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 Yeah, please. Yeah,
It's
tell us. Yeah.
sure. So it's similar to IFS, but INFS, they kind of work on releasing the energy of those wounded parts. But we actually focus on coming into relationship with them. So we kind of, pull that part out and basically reparent them in a way that basically deals with those wounds so that we don't foist them on our partner. So it's basically correcting, having corrective experiences to deal with some of that underlying trauma. And this is in our world we speak to not so much the overt PTSD type of trauma that's more accepted in the culture, but we deal with what we call developmental trauma, which is a much wider definition. And this comes from the work of Pia Melody, and her definition is really any less than nurturing parenting. And so when you look at it from that lens,
is there anybody who didn't experience that?
Exactly. So we're all traumatized to some degree, and I do believe that's true. And so it's just a matter of where you are in the spectrum. But for our nervous system, each of our own individual trauma was a very real thing for us. And inevitably, you know, will be part of the healing journey.
I remember there was a Far Side. You remember the Far Side?
Yes, yes.
There was a Far Side cartoon showing a great big auditorium, and the sign, and there was a sign up in front saying, "Welcome, adult children of normal parents." And there was hardly anybody in the room. kind of reacting to the
Gary Larson.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, that notion that sure, we've all been hurt along the way, and that those hurts, if they sit there and we're not able to integrate that or heal it, then it's going to come out in our relationships, indeed.
Yeah, I think that one of the things I've learned, you know, along the way in my journey is the degree to which this trauma is impacting our relationships. I think many of us are really not aware to the degree that it's happening. You know, whether there's a hypervigilance and you're really anxious and you chase your partner into the bathroom and are banging on the door, or you're somebody who really is like verbally dumping on your partner, blame, shame, criticism, or you're the one who kind of disappears into the other room and really has trouble expressing your emotions and doesn't feel safe in that connection. Mm-hmm. Those are all learned behaviors or reactions to what we did or didn't get in childhood. And so those can be addressed, you know, as long as we start with the awareness of the consequences that it has on the intimacy in our relationships, then we can start to shift that.
Mm-hmm.
When you have couples that are like in deep conflict, how do you help them navigate through the conflict when it gets escalated?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things, you know, if they're in a very triggered state, we know that the blood flow is really moving away from executive functioning, mm-hmm. and they really can't show up with their partner in those moments. And so we kind of like to think of it as, you know, there's you and your partner, but then there's a third thing. It's the relationship, and that's something to be protected. And so we like to suggest that ideally you don't have more than one triggered person at a time. You know, one person can kind of be the protector of the relationship and do their best to stay moderate, as you say, and, you know, say to your partner, I really want to hear what you have to say right now, but, you know, if you're yelling, I can't get you what you need. So you can try that a couple, three times, and then if they go into the, you can tell them you can go into the other room. And if when they're ready, you can come back and hear what they have to say. But, you know, if you find that you're not able to resolve things on your own, then I would definitely say, you know, do get professional help. Mm-hmm. If you're having the same fight over and over again, you definitely need somebody to help break those patterns.
I've had occasions to say to a couple, "Boy, you guys should see somebody." Oh, wait a minute. they laugh when I say that. So that tends to break the tension a little bit. Yeah, that's interesting. That notion, you know, when things get escalated, you know, as you pointed out, the, you know, the functional MRI studies have been fascinating on that. Where you can actually see, yeah, there's nothing, the blood ain't going to those places where you can actually think. So, and I think what one of John Gottman's things is, right, he'll put a pulse oximeter on people's fingers.
Yes.
When it exceeds a certain amount, depending on whether they're athletes or not.
Oh.
Athletes, they have to set it lower because they have a lower, you know, uh-huh. heart rate. But for us mere mortals, I think, what does he set it to 100 or something like that?
Yes.
When it exceeds 100, it's like they just stop in mid-sentence and go to their separate corners for a while. And then they come back and it's like they've had a brain transplant. Because it's like, okay, you're back, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You need to, you know, have that break to really downregulate your system and get yourself to a place where you can, you know, have the capacity to show up for your partner and be able to listen and hear them. Yeah. That's when you know you're being relational, is that those two things are happening. And if you're not, then that tells you there's some level of reactivity still
Yeah.
happening.
I have a thing, one of my favorite little buzzwords that I talk about with in terms of getting to that place is what I call the oh shit moment. And
Yes.
the oh shit moment, it's not the one hitting your thumb with a hammer. The oh shit moment I'm talking about is the oh shit, no wonder we're having this problem. I'm starting to see what you're saying. And we still don't agree. You know, it's not an aha moment because they haven't solved it yet. But
Yes.
it's like, oh shit, now I can hear you, and now I can hear me. Oh boy, no wonder we're having this problem. And then all of a sudden they're working on a common problem, even though they haven't agreed yet.
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point because Gottman talks about how 69% of couples' issues are unresolvable. This
Yep.
is a staggeringly high
Wow.
number.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, we need to normalize that a lot of things may in fact not come to resolution. But the point is, as you mentioned, is to come back into connection and making sure that you're at least having a conversation around it. Maybe you're bringing in some humor, but you're not letting it slide under the carpet
Yeah.
and cause resentment.
Yeah, when I've often quoted that statistic to folks, and you know, the roughly one third of problems that do go away is fascinating to me. I speculate the problems that do go away, and this, of course, Gottman was studying couples over decades, you know, the same couples. So the problems that do go away would be the ones that are sort of specific to a particular part of your life. You know, the problems involved in raising young children go away when you're done raising young children. But the personality stuff, the stuff that's pretty stable, that's not going to change that much. And the couples that do well are generally relaxed about it. It's funny. We know that one. I have nothing to put up with Judy, but she has a lot to put up with me. And she's very gracious about it. You know, what can I say? Otherwise we'd be toast, you know? So, and, but it's, it is about accepting that sense of, well, that's kind of who you are. And I sort of knew that and it's okay. You know, if it is okay,
You
you
give me too much credit.
know, well, thank you.
And not yours, and you don't give yourself enough.
Well, I appreciate that. But you know, that phenomenon of generally it's okay because they learn to accept, you know, and of course that's the other thing that Gottman has pointed out. The number of problems you're talking about doesn't predict anything.
Correct.
Yeah. And that's I always found that fascinating. It's like, yeah, there are these couples who identify very few differences and they end up splitting up, and these couples who identify 17 differences and they end up staying together.
It's true. I
Yeah.
mean, some couples, you know, they're so night and day in like 10 core areas, but they have done the work and they have found a level of compatibility to be able to make the relationship thrive in the way that they need it to. So it is possible, but again, you've got to have those skills on board. You know, love is a skill and it's a minute by minute practice. And so it's so important in this age to really do what we can to educate ourselves. There's so much information out there now. It's in a remarkable era we're living in. There's really kind of no excuse at this point. The information is there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose I'll offer an excuse for folks, which is yes, the information is there, and then all the contradictory information is also there. And you know, the subtitle of my last book was Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
Yes.
And I applied that to myself as well. In the
Okay.
one of the last chapters said, by the way, that applies to me too. Everything I know about couples therapy is wrong also, which is
Yes.
to say, yeah, we don't know for sure anything. What we have is some things that we can work with. But it's, you
Yeah.
know, it always has to be in a sort of non-fundamentalist way. You know, it's like, well, always open to the possibility that, well, isn't that interesting? That's a new wrinkle. I hadn't thought of that one, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it kind of speaks to the fact that there's, you know, many different modalities, and healing can look differently for each person. But I think the more the practitioner has, you know, different tools and skills in their kit to really deal with the different things that come up in the therapy room, the better they're going to be,
Oh yeah.
you know, as a clinician.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just having that third party who's coming into it can certainly point out different things that the couple themselves might not have seen. Yes, absolutely. That's basically why they're hiring us, is to kind of essentially kind of be like the adult in the room and really point
Yeah.
out, you know, where are we off, because we've kind of lost track of the issues because we're so, you know, unregulated.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, if there's any couples out there listening who are thinking about getting into therapy, On average, couples wait 7 years before they seek
Yeah.
professional help.
I that's another one of Gottman's quotes.
Yes.
I actually looked up the study that that came from. I suppose am I on a quest now to say, yeah, we always quote that because it's such a nice quote.
Yes.
The study that that came from was someone's senior thesis, I think,
Okay.
maybe a master's degree, it doesn't matter. But it was in the early 90s.
Yes.
And I wouldn't lay a whole lot of, I'm just saying, I can't
Yeah.
resist it. I wouldn't lay a whole lot on that because I don't think there's been any more recent research than that. The point is the well-taken point, which is,
Yes.
and people say this to us all the time, right? It's like, because
Yes.
I'll ask people, why are you doing this now as opposed to, 6 months ago or 6 months from now? And
Yes.
very often, if they don't say, well, because I just found out he or she was having an affair, which is often a precipitator, but if they're not saying that, they're often saying, yeah, in retrospect, we should have done this 7 years ago. That does come up a lot.
Yes.
But anyway, that yeah, I know I've heard Gottman say that, and I've heard folks who are trained by Gottman say that, and I say it on occasion too. But I'm just
Yeah,
saying, yeah, if
well,
you really look up that study, it's like he's hanging an awful lot on one study in the early 90s. So.
yeah, I mean, I think, couples therapy does kind of get a bad rap. A lot of it isn't that effective, and I get it. But you have to seek out the right kind of therapist who definitely will give you hope, somebody who's definitely going to give you some skills. In RLT, we do a lot of micro coaching to really tell them exactly what to say and in what to say, and so that they have that reflection. Because it's just shocking to me, how we're not taught to navigate one of the, number one areas of our life that bring happiness to us. It's like, how are we in this position? But that's part of our job is to really help couples with that.
Yeah, that notion of being able to give people hope, again, that's one of my favorite ways of saying it. I'll use the word faith, and
Yes.
not necessarily a religious sense, but that sense of faith as accepting the rightness of reality, which really includes accepting the rightness of yourself and also your partner. So it's like if your partner's being totally, seemingly totally unreasonable,
Yes.
yeah, there's got to be something important there, even if they're unfair, even if they're, doing wrong things. There's got to be something real there, and if you go there, then you've got a shot at actually hearing each other, as opposed to saying, well, you must be crazy or evil or whatever, in which case you're not going to hear each other.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because part of, I think, moving into relational recovery is coming out of these victim mindsets or, thinking that our partner is the problem and the one to fix things, and really learning that it's about growing our own container so that we can handle it all. And, mastering relationship is mastering your own defensiveness and being able to handle an upset partner. And so, ninja level couples will start to do that self-reflection and say, okay, what are my triggers here? Do I have a fear of abandonment, resentment? Do I feel a fear of being trapped? Like, what's underneath what's happening here? And that awareness can really, start to help break those patterns as they show up.
Yeah, even to have the ability to have that thought, gee, what's happening here? Hopping to the meta level,
Yes.
then if they did an MRI on the scan, they would say, aha, part of you is thinking. You're not just operating in, fight or flight mode or freeze mode. You're actually able to, say, you're actually able to give it some reflection. And that seems to be the way through it.
Yeah, and none of us are going to be able to do that in the moment, but when you're not in conflict, take a look and map out the fighting pattern between you and your partner and see, who's doing what. Inevitably, it's a very similar dance that's happening between couples, no matter what the topic. One partner will be withdrawing, somebody will be pursuing. There's a few core patterns that we see with couples, and so once you learn your dance, then you have a hope of doing a new one.
Yeah, change the steps
Change the steps.
instead of finding a new
Absolutely.
dance.
That's right. Yeah. So, how do you actually work with folks just in a practical way? Do you meet with individuals and then the couple? Do you meet with a couple? Like, what do you usually do? And do you do it
it
like by telehealth or in person or, just tell us?
Yes, so I do work in person or telehealth. Definitely, doing couples work is best, because there's much more opportunity for healing when your partner can witness, you know, and learn more about your pain. So definitely, I think that's the best container to do it. And you know, the first thing we do is kind of look at that dance between you, name that, and then start to see what the consequences of that are. And you know, where do you want to be with this 5, 10 years from now? Let me show you something different. Here are the skills, and then also, where are these patterns coming from? Where is that wounding? Where did it start? And then, you know, you kind of snap the elastic back enough that they can see, oh, this is not really me. You know, my partner's yearning for a more mature adult self. And you know, that's the work that we do in relational recovery.
And when you do see people in person, where are you located? It's funny, you know, on Zoom, there's no such thing as where anymore. We interviewed somebody a couple of weeks ago who was in Australia, you know. We're in Vermont, by the way. Where are
Okay.
you located?
Yeah, I'm in New York City, basically. I'm Queens.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yep.
That's where you were born.
That's where I was born. That's where my son lives too.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, wonderful.
So if people want to get in touch with you, how should they do that?
Yeah, so my website is Conflict to Connection with the number 2. And I have a book which will be released, and they can get a free chapter from my book there as well if they're interested.
Oh, tell what's the
And what's your
title?
website?
Well, yeah, both.
Sure. So it's called From Conflict to Connection, A Modern Day Guide to Getting the Love You Want.
Ah,
Okay, and you
great.
said Conflict to Connection, right?
Yes,
And the
the
number
website.
two, the
Number
numeral.
two.
Conflict numeral two. And we will put that in the notes for this episode as well.
Okay,
Well,
wonderful.
thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for
Thank you,
doing this.
Marissa.
All righty, appreciate it.
Yeah,
Thank
bye-bye.
you. Okay.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed another one of our great interviews with our wonderful guests that we've been so fortunate to have on our show.
Indeed. And if you want to get in touch with Marissa, you can look at the notes from this episode.
Right?
And as always, we have how to contact our guests there.
Mm-hmm.
So, a brief word for our books, buy them.
And for our podcast, follow us, like us, share us,
And tell your friends,
tell your
tell everybody
friends.
else. And so until next time,
Remember, be kind
don't panic.
and have faith.